Welcome. This is Philippe Albuquerque. I'm the editor-in-chief of the JNIS, and today we are featuring the next in our series of JNIS podcasts. I'm delighted to welcome Alice Dispinigaitis as well as Fawaz Al-Mufti, who will be discussing their manuscript entitled Mapping Geographic Disparities in Treatment and Clinical Outcomes of High-Grade Aneurysmal Subarachnoid Hemorrhage in the United States. This manuscript is currently available on the JNIS website and will appear in an upcoming print issue of the JNIS. This editor-in-chief podcast is supported by Rapid Medical. When treating stroke, procedural time and patient safety are critical. Utilizing advanced technology backed by clinical data, Rapid Medical expands what's possible in neurovascular treatment by offering interventional devices that are fully visible and adjustable in the brain. The result? The unique ability to tailor the procedure to every patient. Tools like TigerTriever 13, the smallest clot retriever in the world, bring added control to treating distal or delicate vessels. Visit www.rapid-medical.com for more information. Welcome, guys, and thank you for taking the time this morning to discuss this important work.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for the invitation.
So I found this a very interesting and timely manuscript. Basically, you're assessing geographic disparities in patients with high-grade aneurysmal subarachnoid hemorrhage in the United States. I wanted at the outset for you guys to discuss a bit of, first of all, what was the impetus for pursuing this study? And second, discuss your methods a bit, particularly in relation to the national inpatient sample, which is used quite frequently and as we know, has some advantages, but also has some pitfalls. Perhaps you can address those two points.
Of course. Personally, many of the papers that I personally like to embark on and that I find challenging are questions that stem from clinical practice. Being involved with like many colleagues and like all around the country, there's a lot of disparity in how we tackle higher grade subarachnoid hemorrhage patients. So basically, we had this idea to essentially look into this a little bit more closely. There have been several studies over the past two decades that have frequently shown increasingly favorable outcomes for high grade subarachnoid hemorrhages, demonstrating that favorable outcome can actually be achieved in up to 50% of these patients with early aggressive treatment. And I've actually heard people quote the original, the Hunt and Hess grade, which was unfortunately published many, many years ago in 1968. And that, at the time, identified almost 100% mortality in grade 5s and 71% mortality in Hunt and Hess grade 4 patients. So because there was like relatively little evidence regarding the treatment outcomes of high-grade subarachnoid hemorrhages, and because they were excluded from almost all of the major clinical trials, such as ISAT, for example, these high-grade patients are considered these special populations. And this is basically what I've directed the bulk of my research career to, studying these special populations, because I really feel they warrant attention and interest. So our study sought to evaluate the geographic and regional differences. We felt that we're frequently facing this ethical and moral dilemma. We're dealing with the management of poor grade patients. Like, are we really dealing with like unjustified nihilism, or is there a reasonable optimism? So we sought to characterize and geomap the extent of the problem and better understand geographic, biodemographic, socioeconomic factors that may be contributing to this problem.
Yeah, and I'm happy to address some of the methodology and limitations associated with our study as well.
Sure. So
regarding our data source, which Dr. Albuquerque invoked earlier, we used the National Inpatient Sample, which is one of these popular large administrative registries, which is in the United States, which approximates like 7 million hospitalizations annually. And from this, over the course of 6 years, we were able to identify an adult aneurysmal subarachnoid hemorrhage cohort that we first stratified by severity. using this previously validated NIS subarachnoid hemorrhage severity score, or the NIS-SSS, which, as I mentioned, is a previously validated severity stratification tool that's based on the ICD billing codes that approximates the Hunt and Hess grade and has been shown to have high concordance with it. So we were able to isolate the Hunt Hess 4s and 5s, which essentially comprised our high-grade SAH cohort. The primary clinical endpoint of interest for our study was, you know, treatment of these high-grade patients with either microsurgical clipping or endovascular coiling, which we determined using these validated ICD procedural codes, as well as mortality and functional outcome as secondary endpoints. And then the primary exposure of interest, which is sort of the basis of our study, was U.S. Census Division to assess, as Dr. Al-Mufti mentioned, the geographic and regional differences that may be apparent in high-grade SEH treatment, which then served also to construct our geomaps. And then finally, we used a multivariable analysis using logistic regression to evaluate the associations of these census divisions with treatment when controlling for other things like age, illness severity, demographics, socioeconomic factors, and hospital characteristics. I know that Dr. Albuquerque had asked us to mention sort of some of the limitations associated with these administrative registries. And, you know, it's important to mention that all the clinical data in these registries are derived from these ICD billing codes, which of course are subject to inaccuracies and variation, and in some cases lack important characteristics that are pertinent to treatment, such as aneurysm morphology and related things.
Yeah, interesting stuff, Alas. One of the things that I wanted to discuss was basically in terms of your results, you mentioned that there were more than 99,000 acute subarachnoid hemorrhage patients that were identified, and that roughly a third of those were high-grade patients. And then a smaller percentage of that, about 25%, were actually treated either with clipping or coiling. Do you think that one of the weaknesses in the study is basically that there must have been a reason to treat these patients, right? Do you think that these patients may have improved initially, or how can you explain, you know, a relatively low percentage of patients that actually went on to treatment?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think, I think I can certainly have Dr. Al-Mufti speak to some of the clinical aspects of it. But I think, you raise a good point that these database studies suffer from something like confounding by indication, where it's conceivable that those high-grade patients who were picked out for treatment by the judgment of the clinicians performing the interventions were, you know, more likely to succeed from one reason or another. And some of our multivariable analyses bear out the factors that predicted treatment as well.
And I just to echo what Alice is referring to, I agree with you that some of these patients, I mean, like we get these high grade patients, a Hunt Hess 5 patient who gets an EVD and ultimately sometimes we say we actually put a prerequisite. Let's say we're going to put a drain, we're going to aggressively manage this patient and see if they perk up. And if they do, then maybe treatment would be offered. And is it possible that some of those patients did not receive, did not actually clinically improve when an EVD was placed? And that is definitely a limitation of this paper. We just can't, we don't have the granularity that we would like with these studies. But unfortunately, in many of these like larger population studies, you lack this patient level information, and I think this definitely generated some feedback from on social media, especially about people were like, "Well, is it possible that these patients didn't improve?" And it's definitely a possibility, but when we're talking about only 25% of these patients receiving treatment, it's definitely something that may like that warrants a pause at least, and maybe a self reflection to say, "Let's reassess our practice patterns. Should we not be offering treatment?" Again, back to the unjustified optimism versus nihilism that we're dealing with.
Yeah, I think those are excellent points. Can you guys basically just elucidate or explain the final results of your analysis?
Yeah, happy to do so. So Dr. Albuquerque did kind of a good overview of some of our initial findings with like the distribution of the study cohort, like illness severity between Hunt S4s and 5s, and then the strikingly lower mortality we saw in the treated high-grade patients. But I think the sort of main takeaway is the multivariable analysis where we found significant predictors of treatment and non-treatment. And so to just kind of go through those, we found that following multivariable adjustment, that significant predictors of treatment of these high-grade patients included female sex, private insurance status, as well as government hospital ownership. And then conversely, predictors of non-treatment included increasing age, increasing baseline illness severity or comorbidity burden, aneurysmal location in the posterior circulation, urban non-teaching and rural hospitals, and small and medium-sized hospitals, which are determined by bedside. And then importantly, we found that race and ethnicity was not associated with treatment following this multivariable adjustment. And then finally, focusing on the geographic regions themselves within this multivariable model, we found that the regions that were most highly associated with treatment were the New England states, as well as the West, North, Central states, with treatment rates around 30%. While conversely, the East, South, Central, and Mountain states were associated with the lowest likelihood of treatment, and this was around 20 to 21%. And then across the board, as we show in our geomaps, mortality rates were uniformly inversely proportional to treatment rates in all of these regions.
Of the results, what surprised you the most? What were you not expecting to see but found in this analysis?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the geographic regions are interesting because I think we found, for example, a discrepancy in the Pacific region between like rates of treatment and mortality functional outcome rates. And then some of the Middle America areas where you might not expect. But I think what's interesting, though, is that just evaluating census division like doesn't allow us to account for things like population density and hospital density of a certain area that might explain certain things.
Sure. Were you surprised with the results in terms of the outcomes, particularly regarding race and lower economic status? That surprised me a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I think that, unfortunately, we've seen a lot of publications in the neurosurgical literature and throughout the medical literature that, you know, documenting lower treatment rates and poorer outcomes in, you know, my minority patients. But I think to a degree, this a study like this provides further context that there are other factors explaining these findings that include socioeconomic factors and sort of regional differences.
So Fawaz, maybe in the end you could discuss here what you think are the major takeaway points from this analysis. I think it's certainly a jump to say that we should be treating all of these poor grade subarachnoid hemorrhage patients, but you know, where do we eventually get to the meat of this issue? What further analysis should be done in terms of assessing, you know, the need and the indications for treating patients with high-grade subarachnoid hemorrhage?
Yeah, no, thank you very much. I think that's an excellent question. So basically, in summary, our analysis of this population-level administrative registry demonstrated very clear socioeconomic, demographic, and geographical disparities in accessing life-saving treatment, especially for these higher-grade patients. I think unfortunately, we're still relying to a large extent on a grading system that came out in the 1960s. Things have improved. Healthcare has improved significantly. We are dealing with patients who, like when this paper was like when Hunt's paper was published, we would wait 2 weeks to see if they would survive. And even then, those patients with higher grades did not do well. 100% of them died. We are now treating patients much earlier. We are securing these aneurysms much earlier. Neurocritical care management of these patients has become integral and has advanced significantly over the past two decades. This advancement in the care, in my opinion, makes it almost unethical to deny treatment to these high-grade patients. However, I do agree that we shouldn't be we probably should not be treating every single patient. I'm not saying, I'm not advocating even for treating every single patient, but to rely on the Hunt and Hess grade in and of itself, a grade that was studied in a very different, you can argue a different disease process, although there are still the same subarachnoid hemorrhage patients, but it's a very different, the way we manage this patient makes the disease process, the outcomes and natural history very, very different. So at this point, we're actively working on a modification of this Hunt-Hess grade, and we're calling it the modified Hunt-Hess grade that's basically differentiating Hunt-Hess 5 patients who are comatose from those who have brainstem reflexes and those that don't have brainstem reflexes. Historically, I was like when I first graduated, I was very aggressive. I would manage every single patient. Whether they improved or not, I mean, they got an EVD, they were secured, and then I would manage them. And over the course of like the past, like almost just under a decade, I've noticed, like, I think what the differentiating factor is whether or not they have brainstem reflexes. And I think that's an integral point here. So we're working on a modified Hunt-Hess grading system that includes whether, like, the Hunt-Hess 5 basically remains Hunt-Hess 5 a coma with no brainstem reflexes, and the Hunt-Hess 5s who actually have brainstem reflexes, maybe those should be regrouped with the Hunt-Hess 4 patients, and maybe those should be offered treatment and give them a chance. And maybe the worst clinically, the Hunt-Hess 5 patients who have no brainstem reflexes, maybe those are the patients where you probably should wait and reassess, just pause to see if they do improve with an external ventricular drain or not. Actually, I'm curious to see what's your assessment as far as like these high-grade Hunt-Hess patients, these especially the Hunt-Hess 5s. Do you feel like whether those patients who have a brainstem reflex versus those that don't have brainstem reflexes, there's a difference between them?
Oh, I absolutely do. You know, one of our practice protocols basically is, and I think you alluded to it a bit earlier, but is placement of the external ventricular drain and then, you know, vigilance to see whether or not there's an improvement in patients. But yeah, certainly if a patient comes in with brainstem reflexes and then shows some modest improvement with external ventricular drainage, then we do move towards, you know, fairly rapid treatment within 24 hours and securing of their aneurysm. You know, the problem we often get into after that then is that these patients often don't do well, and there is, you know, an associated large hospital cost associated with their prolonged hospitalization, as well as really, I think, an emotional burden that's placed on the families as we're awaiting, you know, some sort of emergence from coma or from, you know, a devastating neurological condition. Your study didn't look into the financial burdens, so to speak, of treating these patients. I'm wondering if that is something that you could analyze in the future.
Absolutely. It's on our to-do list.
Well, very interesting work, and I think that there remains a lot to be done to better elucidate this complex patient population. I wanted to thank both of you for your excellent article and contributions to the JNIS. Again, I'm talking to Alice Dyspanagitis, as well as Fawaz Al-Mufti, regarding their paper, Mapping Geographic Disparities in Treatment and Clinical Outcomes of High-Grade Aneurysmal Subarachnoid Hemorrhage in the United States. As I mentioned before, this paper is currently on the JNIS website and will appear in an upcoming print issue of the JNIS. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you very much, Philippe. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having us.